From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Yesterday, I said that she should resign. It's clear that she has no intention to do so. But the oversight here, the mistakes, the ineptitude, whatever it is, was inexcusable. We almost lost the life of a former president, and I think there has to be accountability, and it begins at the top.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson this morning on Fox Business. Speaker Johnson has said he is looking at all options if embattled Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle does not resign. We'll talk with Texas Congressman Pete Sessions, a member of the House Oversight Committee that is scheduled to have a hearing on Monday into the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump.
Joe Biden said the withdrawal from Afghanistan was an extraordinary success. Look at our faces. Look at our pain and our heartbreak, and look at our rage. That was not an extraordinary success. The humiliation of our nation was not an extraordinary success.
That was Cheryl Jules, the aunt of Marine Corps Sergeant Nicole Gee, who was killed in the suicide bombing attack during the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. We're going to talk with Texas Congressman Nathaniel Morant later here on Washington Watch. President Biden is reportedly considering calling for term limits for Supreme Court justices and a binding code of ethics. Experts say the move is more of a last-ditch effort to salvage his reelection than a feasible policy proposal. We're going to talk with Kelly Shackelford, president of First Liberty Institute. And finally, we're not the only ones asking the question.
For the last four decades, the GOP has explicitly called for a so-called life amendment, an amendment to the Constitution that would protect unborn children. And you'll see that you don't have that kind of explicit language in the platform this time.
Instead, the platform is vaguer, saying the Constitution's 14th Amendment guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and that states can do what they want to protect it.
That was Laura Casistu and Luke Vargas, both with the Wall Street Journal, in their podcast at the Milwaukee GOP convention. We're going to talk about this topic once again, this time with Dr. Robert George, McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence, Professor of Politics at Princeton University. Why is it missing, and does it matter? The website, TonyPerkins.com. And also, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, you can take Washington Watch with you wherever you go, as well as our daily Bible devotional, Stand on the Word. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. All right, before we go to Congressman Sessions, let's check in with Washington Watch correspondent Victoria Marshall, who's over in the convention center. Victoria, give us an update.
Thanks, Tony. We're here for day four of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, the final day of the convention, where tonight President Trump is expected to accept his party's nomination for president. Now, just a quick recap of the events of last night. The theme was Make America Strong Again. So there was a focus on America's military, as well as President Trump's commitment to our servicemen, while also contrasting his administration with Joe Biden's foreign policy failures. Now, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance spoke. He gave the keynote address as Trump's vice presidential running mate, and he talked about how Trump's vision for America is very much what the country needs, a anti-war, pro-worker, anti-establishment vision that was very much in line with Trump's vision in his 2016 presidential campaign when he first came on the political scene. Now, tonight, former President Trump is going to be giving the keynote address, and sources familiar tell me that he's actually has written his own speech to give to voters tonight. Now, that was not the plan several weeks ago when President Trump had another speech in mind, but he tore up that speech after the assassination attempt on Saturday. Now, the message that he's planning on giving to Americans tonight is a deeply personal message and also a message of unity. Basically, he will be talking about how he can unify the country, both the left and the right, while also unifying the different factions within the GOP behind him. And so we'll be here reporting on that. And back to you, Tony.
All right. Thanks, Victoria. Well, following that assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump, and reports of the U.S. Secret Service stonewalling any congressional investigation. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer issued a subpoena to Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle, demanding that she publicly testify next week. Now, despite the catastrophic failure of the Secret Service, Director Cheadle has said she will not resign. But reports indicate she will comply with the chairman's subpoena. What questions might the House Republicans be asking next week as this investigation moves forward? Well, joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Pete Sessions. He serves on the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. He represents the 17th Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Sessions, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you very much. It's an exciting time here in the air in Milwaukee, and very excited to be with you.
Well, let's jump into what's going to be on Capitol Hill next week. The Congress has been out this week as the Republicans have been gathered in Milwaukee. But next week, first thing on the agenda for the House Oversight Committee is going to be this hearing into the assassination attempt of former President Donald Trump on this past Saturday. Catch us up to speed on activity from the House Oversight Committee. There's been a number of phone calls and conference calls going on during this week. What can you tell us right now, and what questions will you be seeking answers to next week?
Tony, thank you very much. You saw Senator Cruz allude to what was a bipartisan, bicameral opportunity for us to hear directly from not just the Secret Service, but the FBI. The FBI director was on, Christopher Wray, and there was direct discussion that they had with us we did not have with them, because it was really there as an update. I found the update. We took notes, and we're going to hold them to what they said. But in fact, it did not really get into the issues that I would be interested in specifically. Number one, the special agent in charge who is there on site and running the program. What was their countdown to making sure that things were okay? Because we now understand from probably 5 or 6 minutes in towards the president, there were discoveries or information that should have moved upstream or to that person saying before the president went on, everything is okay. And I don't know whether it was a physical communication problem. I don't know whether it was a breakdown, but I think it was a leadership issue that we need to know. What did they not do that would allow them moments before the president would go on to say all points clear? Now, in the aggregate, we are interested in how could someone get 130 yards with a sniper rifle with what was plenty of law enforcement and him simply climb up on this building 130 yards away when everyone else saw him. So these are the open questions that happen. Overall, you and I both know we have a problem or believe we have a problem with being able to make sure that they have the workforce, that they have the manpower, that they have the attention to the job which they perform. But I will tell you, this will not be something that will be swept under the rug. There is no easy answer, and the head of the Secret Service and the head of the FBI are both going to have to answer the question, because we need to know, was there an international plot that was brewing that we have heard about in the media? We need to hear it point blank from Director Wray. That was an overlay to that that should have told them that there was a professional that could be hunting the president, not a 20-year-old amateur. So much, much to be looked at.
There are many questions to ask, many answers to seek, specifically related to the assassination attempt. But stepping back, Congressman Sessions, when you look at a pattern that's emerged from this administration over the last 3.5, almost 4 years, you see you saw in the Department of Transportation, you've seen it with the FAA, you've seen it in different agencies, you've seen it in our military as woke ideology and DEI has become really the focus rather than the mission. And I think in this case, what we've seen, the American people have seen what happens when your mission becomes secondary to what you do as an agency.
Tony, you've hit the nail on the head. This DEI issue, which has been long discussed now by Republicans, that I took a shot at them in government reform and oversight just about a month ago, where I said, what good does DEI do if people are not qualified, if they cannot properly perform the duties? And of course, they could not answer that. They are more interested in who's in the room, not their abilities to effectively perform. We have seen this over and over with this administration, who they have on any given day, Tony, non-military, non-law enforcement, less than 35% of government workers going to work on any particular day. They like to say, well, the standard is 40. They cannot even meet 20 on most days. The Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C., the largest government building, has less than 20% that go less than once a week. And they don't dispute any of these facts. They won't give us their own. And this is where we are. Something else is more interested. What is that, Tony? I'm going to say it. They're more interested in a man being in a woman's locker room than they are about the safety, security, and jobs in this country.
That's what they focus on. They focus on, they're running on it. They focus on abortion.
That's what they talk about.
It is what they talk about. And as we see, the wheels are coming off as a result of that. But I want to go back before we run out of time. So explain why they're not showing up to work. Is this still a hangover from COVID, that they just feel like they can't make their workforce come in?
Tony, I worked for AT&T for 16 years. If the chairman of the board of AT&T or president was more interested in worker rights than AT&T's performance, we would be in trouble. That is what this president of the United States is. He's more interested in workers being happy, finding excuses for them, and ways which they do not have to perform their duties as a team. It is a terrible drop-off of the ability that this government has that we really first started seeing with passport distribution. We've seen it at the IRS, and yet what they want to do is hire 80,000 more employees, but not even get the ones that they've got with a requirement to come to work.
Incredible.
It is a mismatch. So, Tony, you are asking the questions. We could go on and on about the investigations we've done. And by and large, on a bipartisan basis, we've held hearings, and the Democrats agree, too. They are appalled, except this administration and other Democrats continue pushing the narrative. DEI is more important than outcome.
Incredible. Well, the country can't survive long.
Well, this will be their downfall. This will be their downfall. And we didn't even talk about the border, and we didn't even talk about inflation, and we didn't talk about spending. It is a different way to look at the success of this nation. And here at this convention, we are confronted with socialists.
Right.
They hate the word capitalism. They hate the word success. And in this place, this is what we're doing. Listen, say hi to Kelly Shackelford, my dear friend from Dallas, Texas.
Will do. And we'll get you back to talk about that other laundry list of items. Congressman Pete Sessions, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. You bet.
All right, folks, stick with us, because we're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. But also, let me encourage you, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, download it. Go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. Not only can you get the Washington Watch, our daily devotional, Stand on the Word, but you'll get our news feed from the Washington Stand, and there's community there for those that want to pray over these issues, those who want to join together in Bible study. All of that is there on the Stand Firm app. It'll help you stand firm as we are in days which are, well, let's just say challenging. It is the fourth and the final day of the 2024 Republican National Convention, with the Republican nominee, former President Donald Trump, preparing to make his case for a second term in just a few hours. His running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, addressed the nation for the first time as a vice presidential candidate last night with a moving speech that included a tribute to his mother. And what can we anticipate from tonight's event? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more live from the convention is Congressman Nathaniel Moran. He serves on three House committees, including the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and the House Judiciary Committee. He represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, Tony. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you from Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's a lot of excitement. I left there on Monday. I was there last week for the platform committee, stayed over through the weekend to speak at a couple of churches, and then was there for Monday. And then I actually let the alternative delegate from Louisiana have the fun of being there on the floor of the convention. So let's talk a little bit about last night, because you're very focused on foreign policy. We had a powerful reminder of the chaotic Afghan withdrawal. So these issues obviously are being talked about for a reason. The American people care about them. These will be defining issues in the election.
Absolutely, they will. And you saw signs in the arena last night that said peace through strength. As Republicans, we all know that term, that great Reagan foundation on how to go about our foreign policy. And it's a great reminder of what we have not seen over the past 3.5 years under President Biden's term. The term really under President Biden has been weakness. Weakness not only in the Afghanistan withdrawal, but in the China balloon gate, and not protecting our borders and protecting the sovereignty of the United States. You can go on and on about the weakness in the White House right now. And that is a very different thing than what we saw under President Trump, where you saw lots of strength. And that provided deterrence in this world and provided peace and stability and prosperity. And that's what we expect in a second term as well.
Nathaniel, last night the convention also featured support for Israel. That was a part of last night's event. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was so glad to see that because Israel is just one of our closest allies, and we have to stand steady and firm, and President Biden has not done that. And last night we heard great reminders about why we need to continue to do that. It is in America's best interest, its national security interests, its economic interests, its foreign policy interests, and quite frankly, its moral interest for us to remain allied with a country that shares so many values. We are a nation that was built on a Judeo-Christian ethic that came from the natural law of God. We share that foundation. We must promote that foundation, not just a history, but a future with Israel.
Well, with that in mind, I would have to believe you're probably disappointed with the GOP platform that only includes one line about our party's commitment to Israel. We stand with Israel. Nothing about the forced two-state solution that's been foisted upon them by the left. I think Israel is one of those defining issues that the party needs to clearly articulate.
It is, and not just on the Israel issue, but on the life issue. I know you've talked about that as well. There are some things that we need to make sure that our actions continue to show strength in the moral issues that have really defined us as a conservative movement for more than two generations at least, but going back several generations. We cannot get to a place where we are bound in moral relativism. That is a mistake. That would take us in the wrong direction. That's the direction of the Democrats. That's what's got them to a place of socialism. We need to be rooted in moral absolutes. And life is one of those. And standing with Israel has been a real pillar of those moral truths and moral foundations of our country and of our conservative values over the past several decades. We cannot lose that in action, even if it's not in the written word of what was adopted here on the floor.
Let me ask you about that, Nathaniel, because as an evangelical Christian, you come into the political arena, you and I have had conversations about this, really from your faith. Your faith compels you to be involved. And those issues are very important if we want to engage Bible-believing Christians in the political process. It's been the bridge. I mean, it's what brought me into the political realm. I was a police officer. I was fine doing that. But it was the life issue that brought me into the political arena. And I don't think I'm alone in that.
No, you're not alone in that. And that's what drives my service as well. I've told you several times that I felt called to public service from the fourth grade. I believe it's a divine call that God places on our lives, and we must follow that. And we have to be rooted in the moral truths of God. We cannot get away from that. Once we get away from that as a party, as a nation, that's when our nation is really going to fall in on itself. And I hope that our Republican Party is not going that direction. I pray and hope that it's not going in that direction. And as you have talked about before, we've got to pray, we've got to stand, and we've got to vote. If we will do those things, that will hopefully get us continued in the right direction. But there's some areas where you want to have some deep conversations with colleagues and say, listen, we do not want to repeat the mistakes of the Democrats. We do not want to be the Democratic Party of the 90s that led to the Socialist Democratic Party of today. We don't want to do that.
And those defining issues are really what Ronald Reagan stood on when he challenged the Soviet Union. And we face a very similar opponent today in China. Most are not paying attention to that, but China is a great threat to us, and we have to have moral courage to face it. Well, I got 30 seconds left, but you've been focused on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got to beat China on the world stage because they want to spread their influence, which is at least an amoral, if not an immoral, influence around the world. And it's going to squish the ability to spread the gospel. We want liberty out there in the United States and throughout the world so that the gospel of liberty can dominate.
Absolutely. It's ordered liberty. is what we seek to protect and promote. Congressman Nathaniel Moran, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to see you, and I love that red jacket.
Thanks, Tony. Pleasure to be with you. Have a great night.
All right. Take care. All right. When we come back, we're going to, boy, today must just be Texas Day, because Kelly Shackelford is going to join us. First Liberty Institute. We're going to talk about President Biden throwing deep to try to stir up his base as he takes on the Supreme Court. That's next. Don't go away.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. All right, President Biden appears to be desperate to retain his increasingly tenuous grip on the leader as the leader of his party. Reports indicate he plans to comply with the left's push to endorse sweeping changes to the U.S. Supreme Court. The proposed overhaul includes legislation to establish term limits for the justices, as well as enforceable ethics, an ethics code. Now, these plans come as the left continues its multi-year temper tantrum against the court following the overturn of Roe v. Wade. So how should conservatives respond to this threat to the court? Is it real? Could it happen? Joining me now to discuss this, Kelly Shackelford, president and CEO of First Liberty Institute. Kelly, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
By the way, I had Congressman Pete Sessions on the blitz earlier and he wanted me to tell you hello, another Texan.
I love to hear it.
All right. So tell our viewers and listeners what's going on. What is Joe Biden proposing?
This is very serious, and people need to pay attention. Obviously, he's desperate, but the danger, Tony, is that 130 different progressive groups have come together for this whole effort to remake the court. And they're trying a lot of different ways, but they're all incredibly dangerous. So let's take the original, which was the court pack. You know, they had a bill to add four justices, to add 200 lower court judges. And that might sound like it's a horrible political move, but it's worse than people understand, because every other country where they do this, your country's over the moment you do it the first time, because your court is now not a separate branch. It's the rule of law is gone. It's just a political body. And so whatever constitutional right you think you have, you don't, because you can just, if you're the person in power, you can just add however many justices you want to take away that right. And so there was a big fight over that. They tried to push that through. We and you and others spoke up and really educated people on the history of this. They even tried it in this country in 1936, 37, and we stopped it. And so what they've gone to is a new approach, which is equally radical and dangerous. And that is what you're hearing now. You might some people think, hey, yeah, you know, term limits for justices, that might be a good idea. That can be debated. The founders put it in there as life because they wanted there to be judicial independence. And in the polling we did just within the last year, over 90% of Americans said that they thought the independence of the judiciary was one of the most critical things about our country. So I don't think they want to start messing with that. Well, we can debate that. But what they're really doing, this is a sham, Tony. What they're doing is they're saying we want term limits, and we're going to start by getting rid of the oldest justices, the ones who have been on there the longest. So Clarence Thomas goes, Alito goes, Roberts goes. Interesting, isn't it, that only the more conservative justices go, none of the liberals. And then the ethics proposal is also really dangerous. It's unconstitutional first. Just like the court can't tell the Congress how to do their internal affairs, the Congress has no authority without a constitutional amendment telling Supreme Court justices how to do their job as justices. This is a massive attack on the separation of powers, the independence of the judiciary, and this is just about politicians that want to browbeat, attack, intimidate the justices. And so both of these are really just one group not liking the decisions they're getting in some of the cases. Most of the cases are unanimously decided this last term, more than that, than anything else. But they don't like a few of them. And so in a partisan move, they're trying to politicize the court. And that's just incredibly dangerous. What we have here is so valuable that I think sometimes people don't realize if we lose it, we won't get it back. And that really our country will never be the same. That this is dangerous, even though it's radical and we hope it'll be stopped. It's something everybody needs to be alerted to.
Kelly, isn't this, you know, they dominated the court. They used the court to impose their policy ideas, which are unpopular with the American people. That's how the left has always used the court. They lost that when there was a move back in 2016, kind of a populist movement electing Donald Trump, who actually followed through on commitments to put constitutionalists onto the court. You were a part of vetting some of those. And that has kind of righted the balance of powers in our government. And so the left doesn't like that because they cannot force their will on the American people. So this This is just another way at going at control for the court, right?
It is. And the thing is, it's so short-sighted. Look, I understand how extremists on the left, you know, would say, God, I don't like these decisions. And we even in the polling we did originally, the polling that we did on this was really serious. And the Democrats at first were ready to pack the court. But what happened is when we started to educate them as what it meant, it went from 63% in favor to 41% in favor. Now, everybody else was against it. But the Democrats themselves, when they had all three, they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, were pushing to do this. All we did is help them understand, look, it's not like you're going to add some justices and you're going to make the court a little more favorable to you. No, what happens, like in Venezuela and Argentina, you can go through lots of countries. When you do this once, your country's over because the court is now politicized and it's owned by the legislative branch and there is no independent judiciary. And so that's why anybody, conservative, liberal, should hate this idea if they care about any of their freedoms.
Right. Any tinkering with what the founders established, I mean, I think they were truly divinely inspired as they created it. And I think we have to be very, very careful when we start messing with it. And in fact, I don't have time to go into it, but the direct election of senators was one of the things that threw this whole thing off. We just need to be very careful about those changes. Kelly Shackelford, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, after the break, we're going to be joined by Dr. Robby George, a professor at Princeton University, to talk about really what is in the plank of the GOP life platform. What does it really say? That's next.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. Be sure and download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, download the Stand Firm app. Our word for today comes from Psalm 62, where David prays to God about the tactics of those who have come against him. They only consult to cast him down from his high position. They delight in lies. They bless with their mouth, but they curse inwardly. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Notice the words of those who oppose the truth of God. They are deceptive and deceitful. They will use God's talk, but the devil is in their heart. Many have been deceived over the decades because they did not know the Word of God nor operate in the discerning power of the Holy Spirit. We need to be very discerning these days. There is a lot of God talk, but it is talk that twists and distorts the Word of God. God talk, if it is real, should be followed by God's walk. God's Word should be evidenced by walking in God's ways. To join us in our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org or simply text the word Bible to 67742. When Donald Trump first ran for president in 2016, he aggressively courted the Christian vote, declaring himself personally pro-life as well as a supporter of federal legislation to protect unborn babies. As president, he followed through. He did exactly what he said he was going to do, appointing three justices to the U.S. Supreme Court, which led to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. As the 2024 election approaches, former President Trump's team changed the tune a little bit, aggressively pushing through the 2024 platform, refusing to allow amendments or even debate, which frankly makes this statement by Senator J.D. Vance last night ring a bit hollow.
My message to my fellow Americans, those watching from across the country, is shouldn't we be governed by a party that is unafraid to debate ideas and come to the best solution? That's the Republican Party of the next 4 years. United in our love for this country and committed to free speech and the open exchange of ideas.
Well, I embrace that as an ideal, and I think it's essential, but it didn't happen last week at the RNC Platform Committee. And it's not just the process that's problematic. It's actually the product. Could have been much better had we been able to amend it and change it. The platform waters down and walks away from bedrock principles that define the modern Republican Party and have made it a competitive party. Supporters of the new platform say, well, it's succinct and it's clear. But is it? Is it clear? Is it succinct? Well, joining me now to discuss this, Dr. Robert George. He is the McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence and Director of the James Madison Program in America, Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. Dr. George, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Good to see you, Tony. It's been a long time. Thanks for inviting me onto the broadcast.
Well, before we get into a discussion of where the Republican Party may be now on the life issue, marriage and family, I want to step back for just a moment because I think we've gotten here by maybe a misrepresentation of what happened 2 years ago at the Supreme Court in the Dobbs case. Did the Supreme Court say that the issue of abortion, of life, was now a state issue and that the federal government had no role?
Did not say that. And in fact, when the Supreme Court has had occasion to actually rule on federal legislation, for example, the so-called partial birth abortion ban, the Supreme Court has actually upheld federal intervention. And that was even before the Dobbs decision. So the Supreme Court ruling in Dobbs does not say that the federal government has no role. It does not prohibit the federal government's entry. Certainly, it's true that responsibility begins with the states in our system. But if states fail to fulfill their constitutional obligation under the 14th Amendment to accord to each and every person the equal protection of the laws, then that same amendment, 14th Amendment to the Constitution in its fifth section, in the clearest possible terms, says that Congress shall, not may, shall, by appropriate legislation, enforce the guarantees of the amendment, including the guarantee of equal protection for all. So the federal government indeed does have a role, and the Supreme Court has not said otherwise.
Well, you brought up the 14th Amendment. Let's go right to that, because the platform, that's the only thing that it really mentions. In this 2024 platform, gone is the Human Life Amendment. But the platform mentions the 14th Amendment, but as I read it, something's missing that's been there in the past.
The reference to the 14th Amendment is incoherent, Tony, in the platform language, and it's really inexcusable. We've had good platform language for 40 years protecting unborn children. Over the period of that 40 years, liberal Republicans, so-called moderates, pragmatists, have worked night and day to try to water down or eliminate that strong pro-life language. People like Arlen Specter, the late Arlen Specter, you'll remember this, of course. But it was only when Donald Trump and his operatives this year decided that they wanted rid of that strong pro-life language that the language was taken out of the platform. The reference to the 14th Amendment invokes the Due Process Clause, not the Equal Protection Clause. That's a mistake. And it claims that the 14th Amendment simply empowers states to protect unborn children. That's not true either. The authority of the states is plenary. They're governments of general jurisdiction. They exercise what we in constitutional law know as police powers to protect public health, safety, and morals, and to advance the common good. The 14th Amendment was enacted by the Republican Party after slavery was abolished in the 13th Amendment to give the federal government power to protect people, the equal protection rights of people, when states failed in their obligation to protect them. The 14th Amendment doesn't empower states. They don't need empowerment by the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment empowers the national government, what we call the federal government. This is really inexcusable. This kind of incoherence in the platform language is an embarrassment.
But I want to go back to something that's missing in terms of the past. Since the mid-80s, we've had a call not only for it goes back to 1976 for the first call for the Human Life Amendment, but then was the application of the 14th Amendment to the unborn. Because
Via the Equal Protection Clause, Tony, that's what I was saying.
That's not in here. The unborn is left out.
What you have is an incoherent reference to the Due Process Clause, and even then, there's a botch job, because due process clause is invoked as if it empowers states
to do what they can already do,
empowering the national government. And what the 14th Amendment, whether it's the due process clause or the equal protection clause, for that matter, the privileges immunities clause, does is empower the national government to protect rights when the states fail in their constitutional obligation to protect them.
I actually had an amendment in the process to clarify and fix a part of that, but there was no debate. There was no discussion. This was forced through. And I go back to something you said a moment ago. What the moderates and liberals of the party couldn't do, the conservatives did.
Well, I don't know if he's a conservative, but Donald Trump and Trump's operatives did it. That's exactly right. We fought that effort off for 40 years when it was people like Arlen Specter. And now, unfortunately, our party, my party, your party, has caved in.
But what, to me, Dr. George, which was so egregious, was not, I've been, you know, we've known each other. I mean, you were a part of the initial interview that I had when I came to the Family Research Council.
That's right. I was on the board when we hired you. Pretty good decision, as things turned out.
21 years ago. And I've been in the minority on many issues in the legislative process, but we've always had rule of law in debate. And what was so troubling to me was the process in which there was no discussion, no ability to fix this. And not only is it the life issue, but marriage, which is something you and I have worked on as well. All it says here is we support the sanctity of marriage. What does that mean?
It doesn't define marriage. Past platforms have called for the overturning of bad Supreme Court opinions, which supported the redefinition of marriage, the so-called Obergefell opinion, for example. That has now been taken out. There's nothing in the party's platform that calls on our nation to return to the basic principle of marriage as the conjugal union of husband and wife. Social conservatives, moral conservatives, religious conservatives, Christian conservatives have nothing to cheer about here. This has been an unmitigated catastrophe for the causes, the values in which we believe.
Hard-fought battles over decades wiped out in hours.
That's exactly right. With no serious debate, discussion, it was rammed through. I know that you did your best, Tony. I know that you worked hard to try to protect the language that supports our values, but you were not given a fair opportunity, nor were your colleagues.
Well, the media was kept out. Now I know why. They did not want to see, they did not want the world to see what they were doing. They didn't want conservatives to see what they did behind those locked doors. So some would say, you know, and we're hearing this because there's been some pushback. Now, of course, the assassination attempt over the weekend kind of shifted the focus and unity became the focus. And I understand. So that debate kind of diminished, but it has popped up a little bit during the course of the week. And mostly surrogates for the president saying, you know, people don't pay attention to the platform. We've got to move on. We've got to get voters. This will help us win. What do you say to that?
Well, Tony, I saw yesterday an interview with Eric Trump. And if anybody's a surrogate for Donald Trump, it's certainly Eric Trump. And it was a liberal journalist who was interviewing him. And she made the point that this new platform language seems to water down the party's commitment to protect unborn children against abortion. And it seems to eliminate the call for marriage to be defined as the union of a man and a woman. And she asked Eric Trump, doesn't this represent a change in your father's views? And Eric Trump replied by saying, no, these have always been my father's views. This is who my father is. And then he went on to say, and this reflects the views of my wife, Lara Trump, who, of course, I believe is co-chairing the Republican National Committee. So was President Trump and his surrogates, were they telling us the truth back in 2016 and 2020, or are they telling us the truth today? The story has changed.
Dr. George, you've been a part of not only teaching, raising up many wonderful leaders, but part of that is to engage the culture with ideas, with truth, from conviction, moral conviction that comes from faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You know, I entered into this arena, the political arena, because of the issue of life. I would have been happy to stay as a police officer, but these things compelled us to move forward. What do those who are compelled to engage because of their faith do when a party departs from a really long-held position that runs parallel to or in concert with their faith?
Two connected answers to that, Tony. Number one, tell the truth. Tell the truth in season and out of season, whether it's convenient or inconvenient, whether it brings you applause or the opposite of applause, tell the truth. And I know you're doing that, and I am bound and determined to do it. I'm going to tell the truth, whether it's a Democrat, whether it's a Republican. If someone is failing in their obligation to stand up for the sanctity of human life and marriage is the conjugal union of husband and wife and religious liberty and our core values, then I'm going to tell the truth about that. Number two, what we need is fidelity, fidelity, fidelity. No matter what the party does, no matter what the leadership does, no matter what the leadership of groups that are supposed to be dedicated to our causes, whatever they do, when it comes to us, we have to remain faithful, faithful to our fundamental values. Now, notice, by the way, Tony, that these values that we're defending, sanctity of human life, marriage is the conjugal union of husband and wife, yes, they are in line with our Christian faith, to be sure, for those of us who are Christians like you and me. But these are not Christian dogmas. These are not principles that are only available for affirmation by virtue of the biblical revelation or witness. We can, by reason, which is why lots of people who are not themselves Christians, lots of Jewish people, lots of people of other faiths, also affirm these principles. So we're not trying to impose our religion on anybody, quite the contrary, any more than Martin Luther King, who invoked God and the Bible a lot, was trying to impose his Christianity on those who opposed segregation. We're not trying to impose our religion on anyone, but we are motivated ourselves in part precisely by our faith and our sense of duty growing out of that faith. And so we have to tell the truth in season and out, and we have to be absolutely faithful to those principles. And it's going to cost us, by the way, Tony. It's going to cost us. You and I are going to be pushed to the margins. We're not going to be insiders. We're going to be made outsiders. You and I both had experience being insiders. You and I both sat in the Oval Office of the President of the United States at different points and given advice and had our opinions solicited and so forth. When we stand up for what's right, when we're faithful, when we tell the truth about our own party, just as we do about the other party, we're going to pay a price for that. But it's a price that we are required to pay.
The truth of God's word does not change. And it's rooted, it's not only rooted in the word of God, but as you pointed out, nature speaks to this. The natural law reveals this. And we have to stand firm on that regardless. And these are not just other issues. I mean, this is not the marginal tax rate. This is not inflation. Exactly. These are foundational issues, and there's really no room for compromise.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that we're right to pursue, as you and I have pursued for many, many years, for example, on the pro-life front, an incremental strategy, but it's got to be a strategy of moving forward.
Right.
We get what we can get today, and then we move to work for further protection until someday down the line we achieve our goal of every child being welcomed in life and protected in law. That's the goal. We can move incrementally, but we can't give up. We can't say, well, there are some unborn children we're not going to protect. We're just going to cut them loose. We're going to leave them aside. We're going to protect every child we can when we can, and our goal will always be to protect every child, every child.
We must always move forward, no retreat. Dr. Robert George, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tony. Good to be with you.
Folks, thank you for joining us as well. And I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand. Folks, we must keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.